Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
It is time on the Midweek Drive to actually welcome back, I won't say a lost soul because he's never been lost, but it's astounding that we haven't actually featured him for far, far, far too long. Actually, his book of the month, Witchwood, was featured on the 20th of October 2017. It was given full thumbs up by Jenny Finch, Rob Nichols, and of course William Coles. But we realised we needed to put this right immediately, so we say a hearty welcome back to a creator of Newbery and Hobbs, a creator of Warhammer 2000, a creator of new adventures for Sherlock Holmes and so much more. It's the awesome George Mann. How are you, George?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for the great welcome back. It's nice to be here.
You know, you're always part of the Midweek Drive team, George. That's the important thing, and probably joining Residents Rewind as well from that point of view. We'll turn also to one of our ace correspondents from Little London, voiceover artist extraordinaire, and indeed creator of a whole children's series of bespoke stories for children for bedtime. Of course, is Philip Hurdwood. How are you, Philip?
I'm very well, fighting fit, fighting for breath, and fit for very little. No, I'm feeling great. Great, great, great. I'm enjoying the heat. Despite most people moaning about it. My garden's drying out, but no, I don't mind.
This is so true.
Get a watering can out, that's all you have to do.
And somebody who's actually saying, oh, I quite like that, Philip Hurdwood. Only yesterday when we were actually on patrol and on location at the York Maze, hence, George, I've still got the two York Maze mascots, Colonel and Friend.
I do like being damned by faint praise. I quite like him.
Exactly. Isn't that right, Chloe Rose, a singer-songwriter and indeed songstress?
I quite like.
More than quite like.
I'm passionately in love with his amazing gifts and talents.
He was awesome. And your music video you was in. The music video you was in. I was talking about that, which was amazing. The pink flamingos.
The very same. Which I'm sure is probably playing pretty much every commercial break, aren't you?
Well, no, because it wouldn't be a commercial then, would it, Philip? You know, if we were playing Pink Flamingos every commercial break.
I get confused at the end of the day.
And besides, Siren and Southside were non-commercial, so we don't have to worry about that. Or maybe we should. George, so much has probably been happening since we last spoke. You've been creating so many worlds of wonder. I mean, I've been thinking, actually, wouldn't it be great if you could actually put Newbery and Hobbs in an adventure with Sexton Blake and Sherlock Holmes? I'm just saying, in a kind of universe.
Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. They're the main inspirations behind Newbery and Hobbs, of course, both of them.
Exactly. Well, that's what I thought we should connect together. But share with us how you've been adding to the Star Wars universe. You've been adding to all sorts of things. What kind of things have you been getting up to over the last few months?
Wow. So I'm just back from San Diego Comic Con, which is obviously the first time in a couple of years that the events run and that I've braved a big convention. And that was brilliant to get back to and see lots of people and talk to editors and comic artists and things. But I've mostly been, this week or this month, I've mostly been writing Star Wars, as you mentioned. I've been lucky enough to be invited to be involved in their High Republic initiative, which is a new era of Star Wars, which is several hundred years before the prequel movie. So when the Jedi were at their height. And the beauty of it is we get to create new characters who, you know, no one knows whether they're going to live or die because they're not going to appear in a movie. So we can toy with people's emotions, like the wicked authors we are. So there's a little team of us.
So where does that actually? So this is kind of like a writer's room, I guess, George.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Listen, where does this get broadcast or released, or what happens when you know we finish the writing part?
So it's mainly a publishing initiative. So it's adult novels, young adult novels, children's novels, comics, and audio originals. So full cast audio dramas. It's mostly coming out through Disney Lucasfilm Press and their publishing partners in the States.
Cool. I don't suppose you might get a sniff at the continuing saga of,
George is working with Disney. Disney actually have such a tight legal routine. I'm amazed he was even allowed to reveal that from a point of view.
Saying the bits that I'm allowed to say, absolutely.
But we have been joined by Gemma Joy, who is sitting there being very patient and hasn't been properly greeted. Alex.
I was just about to say, Gemma Joy, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you? And are you by any chance a Star Wars fan or a Newbery and Hobbs fan? or indeed a Sherlock Holmes fan?
Star Wars, yes. The rest, I probably yet to be discovered. Like to be educated.
Yet to be discovered. That's the important
yet
thing.
Yet to be discovered, yes.
I mean, just returning to San Diego briefly, George, I mean, you said it's obviously the first time it's been live, so to speak, for a couple of years because of the pandemic and the COVID and so on. What was the general sense of folk there? Because, I mean, the general vibe that we were getting over here was that, well, DC didn't really have a great presence there. Marvel did OK. There were various other sort of issues to hand. Was the magic still there?
It was. And I was surprised, actually, because I'd thought, you know, people being cautious about COVID, including myself. Yes, DC didn't have a stand. Dark Horse didn't have a stand. There were various other publishers that didn't come along. But actually, they put a lot of effort into the COVID security. So we had to have vaccine bracelets and masks if you were in the building. They've widened all the aisles so we weren't all pressed together. And I think there was a bit of a celebratory spirit where the people who were there. So while DC didn't have a stand, they had sent delegates there. So they were, you know, the people, professionals from the DC company out there talking about their comics that they're working on, the films.
Films that might be made and then immediately cancelled and then actually not released at all. Yeah. So, you know,
it's a sad story, that one, isn't it? So I think overall it was, you know, I was surprised. I thought after 2 years of being away, everyone might be a bit reserved. We might have lost a bit of that kind of the relationships that you build up with these people over several years when you only see them once or twice a year. I thought, you know, we might have lost a bit of that, but actually quite the opposite. We were all back straight into the swing of things. So, and I think it was probably my most successful one yet, actually.
Well, onwards and upwards, as we know, George, ever since all those Stone Tapes thing, the monthly things that were there. Who knows, we may return to the Stone Tapes. Let's turn to Chloe. Chloe, any questions you want to put to George at present?
Yes, just about what you were saying about Star Wars, you know, and you'll be working with that. I just think that's incredible. Like, wow, what an achievement. I just wanted to say that. I was, like, gobsmacked. But I wanted to say, you know, where did your love for writing start? How did it all begin for you? Was you at a young age? You know, when did this happen, you know, where you started to love it and write? And
Yeah, very young. I remember kind of 7 or 8, I was writing books, as I called them, which were kind of booklets of, you know, I folded paper to A4 sheets together. Oh. And I drew very bad pictures of, I had a caveman character called Noof. And a whole sequence of books about this caveman.
Keep it going. You should, don't let that die, George. That's too good.
I do have, most of them were lost, but my brother did have a photocopy of one of them. So he's rescued it. So I do have
one. You want to frame it. That's where it began.
I wrote a lot through school. I had a brilliant English teacher at secondary school, which made a real difference, Mr. Faulkner, who really encouraged me. And then as I got, you know, hit my teens, discovered, you know, beer and girls and, you know, going out on a night, I kind of left it behind for a little while.
Like a young man in Darlington, George. I mean, surely not.
Actually, when I was 18, I'd met my now wife, then girlfriend, and we moved in together. And I got my first PC. We used to have radio rentals. You'd be too young to remember this, but you couldn't buy a computer because they were so expensive. But as a young man, you could go and rent one. So I rented this old this PC. I got it home, I was really excited, and I set it all up. This is pre-internet as well. And switched it on and didn't know what to do with it because it had a word processor and a spreadsheet, and that was a calculator and solitaire. I was so kind of excited to play with this computer. I thought I'll just try and write something, you know, playing with Word. And I just got back into the swing of it from there. I kind of started writing, thought, oh, I remember why I love doing this, you know. And carried on writing from that point.
And look where you are now. Kept going.
Yeah. A lot of water under the bridge, but a lot of words typed into keyboards. But it's been a good experience.
Wow. Gemma, let's turn to your good self. I mean, I'm not, you're probably far too young to remember Radio Rentals as well. any questions from your own point of view, as indeed a fine Liberal Democrat? So I'm very impressed, Gemma, that you're even wearing kind of gold, so subtly keeping your political allegiances going. You might not have been elected MP for the region in the last election, but, you know, there could be another one coming up soon, so who knows? Anyway, over to you.
Well, we hope.
Well, yeah, or did I just choose a political party based on my favourite colour? Yeah, we're in that kind of political era now. Who knows? Who knows? I'm intrigued to ask George, actually, there's a lot of, on a visual note, there's a lot of things behind you. Are they videos? Are they books? Are they DVDs? And I'm intrigued to know what is behind you, and is that your resource gathering or...?
Yeah, a bit of both. So yeah, so this is kind of one of two rooms that I've built an extension to house my book collection. So most of this is books. This area here is books that I've written. There are kind of CDs and audio dramas and things as well. And then behind me there, there's a tabletop gaming table and a 3D printer.
And here was I, George, thinking it was just a virtual background you'd actually just set up for us. And yeah, it's actually real, that's amazing.
It's a little untidy. I mean, particularly over there, the pile of unread comics. My reading pile is probably as tall as I am. But I never stop buying them. I'm a collector as well.
Yeah,
so
I know what you mean. Yep. Yes. Yeah.
Doctor Who, Blake Seven, Sherlock Holmes, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Are there any favourites that you have, George, in terms of that? Or is that a case of don't be ridiculous? As long as I can play in the sandbox and they pay me, I'll continue producing stuff.
I'm lucky. I've enjoyed writing everything I've been asked to write. I mean, I very much enjoy creating, writing my own stuff, of course, as well. And sometimes I find it hard to leave myself time to do that. I'm lucky enough that I'm at the point in my career where if someone approaches me to write something set in someone else's universe, a pop culture universe, and it's something that I'm not very au fait with or I'm not a fan of, I'm able to say no. And I think that's really important, because I've never wanted to write something that I might end up feeling cynical about, that I'm doing just for cash. So
are you saying, George, that you're the reason there's no more Neighbours being made in Australia? You said no. You turned them down. You said, "Look, unless I can actually bring in Sherlock."
Jump at the chance to write Neighbours, but yeah, I think I feel like if I'm going to write something in a setting, I feel like I have to have something that I can add to that setting. I don't want to repeat someone else's stories or just fill in gaps between other stories. I want to add something that the fans are going to really enjoy. So I do care about all of those different things that I've written for. I Star Wars is a particular thrill for me, really, because and Doctor Who obviously as well is another part of my my upbringing. But both of those brands were so huge and had such an impression on me as kids that now I feel like I'm giving something back a little bit, being able to write these new stories.
Wow.
Gemma, does that answer your question?
Only because I'm a nosy person, but I was also intrigued that you touched on your area, your niche area, and my second question was going to be sort of, you know, could you turn your hand to anything? And actually the fact that you very much see, you know your own unit and you know where you work best, and that you don't actually have a desire to go elsewhere just for the cash. And that's absolutely laudable. I'm not sure how many other people do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm lucky enough to be in a position where I can do that. You know, I've been a professional writer for 20 odd years now, so you know, I've got enough kind of momentum behind me and behind my own fiction as well that I can do that. Whereas, obviously, you know, earlier on in my career, that wouldn't have been the case, and you know, there would have been. You know, I would have loved to write for some of those brands that I now these days I'd kind of go, well, actually, there is an expert out there. They should have that opportunity to write that thing, not me.
But good for you.
Your steampunk credentials, of course, George, and I know that a number of folk in Lincoln who are very big fans of your steampunk work, and in particular Newbery and Hobbs, you certainly put them through that. You're two sort of clear characters there, and certainly the the Hobbs sisters in many ways, as well as Newbury. I mean, you artificial hearts, you know, all sorts of other scenarios locked up. I mean, the Albion Initiative. It's almost, I mean, you know, it's almost as though they're being punished on a day by day basis of that. I mean, is there a kind of secret sadistic George Mann side when it comes to writing your characters?
I think it just, I guess it's the danger makes it a bit more thrilling. It's like, it's, you know, I look at those books as kind of, they're like Victorian James Bonds and with monsters, you know. So, you know, the more you put them through the ringer, the more emotion that's going to be on the page and the, you know, the more, hopefully, the more thrilling it is for someone who's trying to turn the pages, you know, quickly. So that's the theory.
Interesting you said James Bond. I would have said more Newbury and Hobbs are more John Steed and Emma Peel, really, the Avengers a century back, really.
There's a lot of Steed and Peel in there, definitely. Steed and Peel and Sherlock Holmes and Hammer Horror, Sex and Blake, and yeah.
Campers Christmas, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the reason that Newbury and Hobbs exist is when I was younger, and trying to get my first stuff published, I had a friend who, I was trying to write this big science fiction novel because that's what I thought was commercial at the time, you know, this big sprawling space opera. And I kept failing at it. I just, you know, failing in the story, failing in the writing of it. And I talked to a friend who said, just go back to why you love writing, write something for yourself. Just remind yourself why you love it. And I thought, yeah, okay, I'll do that. And that's where Newbury and Hobbs came from. I kind of thought, I'll just throw in all my influences, all the things that I love, and I put it all into one big blender and write a story. And I did that, and I kind of wrote it, and I got about halfway through the first novel, and it was flowing, and more than I'd ever, you know, more success than I'd ever have writing a book. And I sent it back to Michael, and he, unbeknown to me, passed it on to a publisher that he knew and said, you want to have a look at this? And the next thing I knew, they contacted me and said, Michael showed us your book. If you finish it, we'll publish it and have a sequel.
Wow.
And that was how I got, you know, into publishing. So, I mean, wow. I opened my career, really, my friend Michael.
Fantastic.
Yeah, very, you know, very kind of lucky to have a friend who was prepared to do that for me.
Chloe, do you go through a similar procedure when you're writing your own music? I mean, we're literally hours away from your latest single being released.
I know what where Georgie's coming from there about sometimes it's sort of, you can write something and you have sort of passion for it's not in it, and or it's not the right theme, or it's just not something that you're really connecting to. And at times I can get writer's block and think, oh God, I just can't do it. And then there'll just be I'll be a few days into something and I'll be actually, no, I've got another idea. And then it just flows straight away. So you just never know. I just find it really interesting listening to your journey, George, anyway. And I'm just kind of interested because obviously you're saying about Lucasfilms and this, that and the other. Is there any other franchises, like any TV series or any films that you would like to write for that you haven't written for yet, is the question.
Yeah, that's a good question. There's three that I'd say. Ooh. I mean, there's probably more, but three that always come back to you. I've mentioned one of them already, which was James Bond. Then the other two are both superheroes, Spider-Man and Batman. I would love to write a story for both. Whether it'll ever happen, I don't know. But they might do now. We'll see. I mean, you know, Disney own Marvel now, so there's always that kind of that chance, you know.
Kevin Feige always likes to check out these podcasts we've heard, so, you know, who knows? could sort out that. Although I think Spider-Man has got a Sony connection as well these days, so there we are.
Yeah.
George, this may sound a little bit obscure and a bit kind of off the wall, but just the other day, I was looking at something on the eaves of the house, and I thought, what on earth is that? And it actually turned out to be, wait for this, a desiccated bat, probably a pipistrelle, one of the smallest ones. It was desiccated, but it was hanging by the threads, lots of them, of a big spider's web. And I thought, there has to be a story there where Spider-Man somehow entraps Batman.
Yes!
Batman has gone to the dark side, maybe. And Spider-Man has to do what he got to do. So, I mean, it came to me just the other day. It was literally only about 2 days ago. I saw this thing. What on earth is that? Is it a leaf? And it's got claws, probably not a leaf with
it's
claws.
It's a sign. It's a sign, Philip. It's a sign of George's next.
George, I'm going to give that to you, George. I'm giving that to you. And I won't expect anything more than about 15%.
Brilliant. But what a find, though. That's, I mean,
unbelievable.
Strange, strange thing to find on the eaves of the house.
I know. Yeah, weird. So a bat must have flown into a very dense collection of spider web and got entrapped and just couldn't move. And maybe the drought and all that had maybe played a part in weakening the bat. Who knows? I just don't know. But there it was anyway. It was bizarre. Bizarre.
Yeah. Returning briefly to Witchwood, which again was a big favourite, where you actually moved into a kind of police procedural with a little flavour of Warhammer 2000 and various other aspects in there as well. You had a soundtrack working through that. George, do you still actually use a soundtrack? Do you still have musical lines from that point of view? I mean, obviously, you may not have heard any of Chloe Rose's magnificent music as yet, but, you know, we could always squeeze something in from that point of view. Any sort of particular music that you're currently being inspired by?
It's really eclectic. I go from folk music to heavy metal and everything in between. I tend to listen to a lot of female singer-songwriters. What tends to happen, when I'm writing a new project, I it sounds strange, but I'll latch onto two or three songs by a particular artist, and they become the thing that influences the tone of the book. So I can't listen to it while I'm writing because I get caught up in the lyrics. But I'll often, if I'm busy working on a long-term project like a novel, I'll get up and I'll listen to those songs before I start work, and they put me in the right frame of mind. So at the moment, it's Lisa Hannigan, who's a Irish singer-songwriter.
I don't know what you smoke. Or what countries you've been to. If you speak any other languages other than your own, I'd like to meet you. I don't know if you drive. If you love the ground beneath you. I don't know if you write letters or you panic on the phone. I'd like to call you all the same if you want to. I am gay. I don't know if you can swim. If the sea is any draw for you. If you're better in the morning or when the sun goes down, I'd like to call you. I don't know if you can dance, if the thought ever occurred to you. If you eat what you've been given or you push it around your plate,
And she's, you know, I'm listening to a lot of her music. And then there's a another female singer-songwriter who goes under the name Bride, B-R-Y-D-E, Sarah Howell. She's Welsh. And they're fantastic as well. So,
and there's Pamela Sue Mann, who should add to your playlist.
Oh, yeah, she's great. She's
okay.
Great. And, of course, Chloe Rose.
And goes without saying, Chloe, of course.
Oh, yeah, she'd have to see, maybe.
What sort of thing do you do, Chloe?
Well, I'm a singer-songwriter, and I do, like, it's easy-listening sort of pop, but it's not poppy-poppy. I don't know how to describe it. It's like ballady, almost folk. How would you describe it, Alex? Sometimes I can't pinpoint.
Wondrous, Chloe. Wondrous is how I describe
Wondrous.
It.
Oh, thank you.
You've got The Sky Is Falling. You've got Hearts on the Line. You've got a variety of other bits. You've got Butterflies. Which one do you think we should actually squeeze in now?
Oh, I think Butterfly.
That's a lovely song.
It's uplifting.
Keep the faith, keep it real. Trust yourself and let it be. Only heaven knows. Find the lock that fits the key. Unlock the truth to set you free. Only heaven knows. Above the clouds, tell me.
Quite dark, George, I'll let you know. There's some dark ones. And there's some happy ones. Yeah, it's good.
I'm going to give them a listen. Will I find you online?
Yeah, it's Chloe Rose with a Y, Chloe Rose. I'll find you anyway. I've had a look at you already, you see. I know you do genre fiction, so I've had a good research already. So, yeah, you've got a fan in me. Keep going. I've got your back. So,
and I know, George, you've always wanted to have Grimsby and Cleethorpes as the boxes to be ticked in terms of the audience. So now it's success.
Of course.
Oh dear. If you ever do go, you probably won't. If you ever did go to Grimsby, try the fish and chips because it actually is really nice.
I will.
That's one thing you can go for.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if there's any truth that the San Diego Comic Con was going to relocate to Grimsby. I mean, we have heard that half the world is going to be the next Hollywood. So who knows what could happen? Really, it's a thought.
Anything could happen
in the next half hour. Gemma, back to yourself. Any other questions or thoughts you want to put to George at present?
I just wondered. I sort of appreciate. And George, your creative ethos and, you know, not getting a tone of music and not getting sucked in. Is there anything you do to break away to completely shut off and reset, push the reset button and then come back to what you do when it gets a bit creatively too much?
Another really good question. And it's really hard. It's really hard to do because I'm sure a lot of people discovered this during the pandemic, but working from home and finding the point where you should actually switch off is really difficult. And I unfortunately, especially when I'm deep in a book, my brain I'll stop because the clock tells me to stop, but my brain will keep going. And sometimes I find it even hard to sleep because my brain's still writing when I'm so I'll often put in longer hours to get that stuff down. So the only thing that really works for me is big old walk in the countryside, and I try and do that every day. I've got a couple of dogs. And we try and do like at least 4 miles every day. Just it's difficult at the moment, but the Lincolnshire countryside is fantastic. So
lovely.
We'll get out and have an amble, and being out in the outside, fresh air, nice clear views of just fields and trees, and that often is the thing that really relaxes me and takes me away. But even then, my brain will still keep ticking, because what will happen is that'll be the point when I'll have an idea that will solve a problem I had in the story or the plot, or, you know, and so I always carry a notebook with me just in case.
Yeah, you've got to, yeah.
That's a good balance. That's a very good balance, actually.
Yeah.
I just found... sorry, Alex.
Go on, carry on, George.
I just found this amazing new app called Treakly, Treakly. And it's for every time you walk over 5,000 steps, it's through like $3.99 a month. This charity will plant a tree, so you can. I do that every day, so $3.99 a month, and I get a tree planted every day, a mangrove tree in Madagascar, which is
wow.
And the reason they're doing mangrove trees is because they're like four times better than the normal forest in locking in carbon dioxide. So I'm now trying to turn my walks into being carbon neutral.
Fabulous.
Very good.
We should get everybody doing that. Yeah.
It's great. They do a free version as well, which is every week, if you do 5,000 words, 5,000 words, there you go, I'm the writer. 5,000 steps every day for a week, they'll plant one for you for free as well. So
isn't that amazing? I love the idea. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Philip, in your writing process, I mean, obviously it's a slightly different audience that you're working for from that point of view. Do you go through a similar kind of process or is it just a case of whatever?
For the children's stories, I have a kind of an idea, and I generally kind of have a pretty much the kind of structure of it, the shape of it, and the characters are all established if it's part of a series. So there's not a lot of thinking. It's just coming up with the plot lines, which are fairly, and they're very young, like the ones I'm doing on the site that we have called superbooks.com are of the ones I'm writing and narrating. Well, I narrate them all, but the ones I'm writing are for the sort of 3 to 5 year olds market. So you've got to keep your sentence structure fairly kind of simplified and your syntax simplified, the grammar and so forth, and not too many long words, but one or two so they can reach for those longer words.
Like an existential, perhaps.
Or possibly not, maybe. But the other thing is that I do write screenplays as well, and that's a whole other thing. And we're now in the process of looking for development money. I think that's almost assured for a supernatural thriller. I've written, which is set in Romania, and it concerns the origins of the vampire legends, and goes back further. In Romania, to the vampire legends, because I have a strong connection with Romania. I have a creative partner there, and lots of good friends. And we've got another film as well, which we've got set in Romania, which is floating in the water a little bit at the moment, but coming along quite well. And the World War II drama, which I've co-written with Graham Harper, another alumni of this show, or alumnus, that's the single.
And the person responsible for you being here, which is the other Doctor Who connection, of course, George, because Philip has indeed been the voice of various alien creatures in the Sarah Jane Adventures and beyond.
And Doctor Who and all sorts of things, Wonderful. I'm proud to say I've worked with a couple of Doctor Who's, you know, David Tennant about three times, although he wouldn't know it. It's just a voice recorded, some, you know, stupid, weird characters with funny voices. But yeah, I love doing all that.
You may say Graham, a voice, but as George would say, with respect to Big Finish Productions, they've made an entire series out of just voices, really, on the audio format.
Yeah. I mean, you can create a character. You know, that's what, you know, radio training, you know, having done tons of radio stuff, you know, that actually trains you to be concise and to be able to paint a picture with your voice and the way you tell the story. And that's important as well. Another thing as well, George, what I reckon when you're writing something, I think, even if it's just a book that somebody picks up and reads to themselves, I think it's better writing if it can be read out loud.
I 100% agree. I absolutely agree with you. I do that myself. I'm one of these people who I sub-vocalise when I read anyway. I've never been able to kind of disentangle that, so I'm quite a slow reader. But I do actually, when I'm going through the kind of edits of my prose, I will read it aloud to myself, just under my breath, to make sure that the cadence is right and, you know, the punctuation works and the dialogue's snappy. I think it's really important.
I think it's vital. And there are two different disciplines. There's kind of, and I've been doing voiceovers for more decades than I can possibly even begin to tell you. And, you know, thousands of voiceovers, quite literally thousands. And you tend to find that some of the people who write the copy can write good brochure writing, good brochure copy. You know, but they can't write copy for the spoken word. And there are two different disciplines. And I think novels, books, should all be written for the spoken word, whether they're intended to be read out loud or otherwise. And I think the better writing, it shines if it's written for the spoken word.
It's becoming even more commercially important as well, isn't it? Because I know, you know, more and more people don't have time to sit with a book, but do have time to listen to audiobooks now.
Audible and
places like that are becoming, you know, a bigger market for writers.
Absolutely. Have you had anything done as an audiobook yet? Or is that something you'd like to get?
There's a few of my novels have been done as audiobooks. And then recently, I've got a friend who's I co-write with sometimes, called Kevin Scott. And the two of us did a couple of Sherlock Holmes dramas for Audible, an original one. And then we adapted Hound of the Baskervilles for Stephen Fry and Colin Salmon.
Wow.
And they're a marvellous pairing, because originally Stephen was going to do Holmes, but we kind of talked to him and said, do Watson, because he's got more screen time in Hound of the Baskervilles, and because we thought he'd make an excellent Watson, and he does.
How interesting.
Makes a fantastic Holmes as well, so they work really well together.
Gosh, that's an exciting project. Yeah.
It was fun to do, and we you know, we really leaned into the folk horror of it, and we tried to keep it as close to Doyle as possible, but also to unpack. Audible have a thing where they want there's a certain break point, that they want a certain length of drama that makes it a thing that people will listen to more. It has to be over 5 hours long. And we thought, well, what we'll do is we'll unpack some of those throwaway things that Doyle says. You know, they meet a character at one point, and he says, oh, they've been burning effigies of me in the village. So we thought, well, we'll show that scene then, and kind of unpack some of these elements into it. And it was a lot of fun to do.
So,
it opens up a whole new wealth of material, George. In terms of the remaining months of the year of three twos, what other projects have you got in mind? Anything that you can actually share with us? Or should you just actually reveal your website and say, just follow me online? And have you set up a TikTok video as yet?
I'm not TikToking, I'm afraid.
Thank God.
I don't have time. I'll be doing some working on some more Star Wars, but also I did a fantasy novella last year. Actually, was it last year? Came out last year. I wrote it during the pandemic. And it was, proper fantasy, like secondary world fantasy. It was a lot of fun to do. And the publishers asked me to do a sequel. So that's going to be my next project as well. Because, it's something of my own. I put my, I put my creator hat on and lean into that a little bit more. A few comic books as well, just in a few...
Or graphic narratives or sequential storytelling aspects, really. It's a whole new world out there. Gemma, would you like to put the first of the last two questions to George, please?
Yeah, George, have you had today a reasonably interesting Zoom chat with us?
I have had a reasonably interesting Zoom chat. Thank you.
Excellent. And would you be prepared to come back again?
Of course, anytime.
Well, there we have it. Our author of the week, officially designated for this particular time, at least George Mann. Philip Herdwood, has it been good for you?
It's always good for me, Alex. And it's always wonderful to see your smiling face on every one of these Zooms. And Chloe and Gemma and George, it's been a joy. Really,
I mean, you may say that, Philip, but it has actually been said that in so many ways, we need to actually adjust the happy smiling face and actually embrace my inner personality, which will come through pretty much like this,
which is
much better in so many ways. And it's really what I feel. Kind of, I call it embracing my inner panda. And I feel that in front of the Arding and Hobbs sort of brand there, there's nothing better than actually sort of working through that process. In fact, in many ways, I was very tempted to turn up at the York Maze recently for this. Chloe, your latest single is called?
Golden Sun, out August the 12th, this Friday. And you look awesome as a panda.
You terrify the life out of me, Alex, sometimes. You really do.
Honestly, it's just the way. I mean, George will say every so often when we used to do in-studio stuff, which, of course, we are now back to, halfway through the Stone Tapes, I just turn into a panda. It happens. I had to sort of leave the room.
Yeah,
that panda moment, it was there.
And if only, dear listener, you could see him.
That's what Facebook's for.
Quite a revelation.
That is what Facebook is actually for, to actually get these messages across and get the whole thing out. We will indeed. So, Chloe, have you enjoyed the Zoomer? Has it been good for you?
Yes, I've loved it. I've loved speaking to every one of you. And, George, I just want to wish you all the best. Fingers crossed.
Very much so.
Spider-Man, everything.
Keep going. I hope the new single goes really well. I'll be listening.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I shall be following, Gemma, your political career with great interest, I have to say.
I did mention that, Gemma. I mean, are you still thinking about that? Because, I mean, obviously, you did stand for Parliament, which I think is very impressive. You didn't have the panda support, but you do now. On that basis, would you consider standing again?
Yeah, I'm still really active locally and sort of in local politics and the National Party at a local level and various community groups, and it's just never ending. So if there is another election, if I am selected again, I will stand. I'll do my duty.
Good for you.
Basically, Liz Truss, watch out. Gemma is on the case.
Well, they sing her as another Lib Dem, but I won't be moving. I'm not for turning.
Indeed.
There you have it. Gemma Joy, Chloe Rose, George Mann and Philip Herdwood. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. And what say you, Philip? Would you like a Pamela Sue Mann number, a Pink Flamingos time, so George can actually listen to your good self at the end?
I think it has to be Pink Flamingos time.
Yeah. Excellent.
I love it.
Supermarket with you. Wanna dance in the supermarket with you. Wanna dance. Let's dance like pink flamingos do, and I will dance like me, and you will dance like you.
Now, caveat emptor is something that clearly we've regularly said you need to bear in mind when you're actually making any purchases. But if those purchases are likely to be impacting your health, specifically your eye health, then maybe you need to be even more concerned. And as we actually experience the joys of summer, it's fair to say that people are looking to look their best and maybe wanting to make a few pennies extra or save a few pennies. And so the growth of the fake designer sunglasses seems to be growing ever more prevalent. To address this dangerous trend, we're delighted to welcome clinical advisor for the College of Optometrists, the wonderful Daniel Hardiman McCartney, MBE. How are you, Daniel?
Very well, thank you. Good morning, Alex.
Well, obviously, we're not wearing shades at present, but at the same time, in terms of this, just talk us through why this finding has actually said that over half of people said that they wouldn't buy sunglasses unless they looked good at them, unless they looked good on them, even if they were good at stopping at dangerous UV rays. I mean, the reason we need sunglasses is basically to prevent us obviously going blind ultimately.
Yeah, it's a really good point, and the research is really concerning. In particularly, we found that almost 2 in 5 people have bought sunglasses after seeing an advert on social media promoting, you know, cheap designer sunglasses. And the thing is, we're very trusting, aren't we? We assume if we're buying it, it's going to do all the good things. And actually, sunglasses, I guess, do 3 things. So they look good, that's fine, but they also reduce the brightness around you. So the dark tint makes it more comfortable to see in bright conditions, and they protect your eyes from the harmful UV light from the sun. And UV light's a really dangerous thing. We know it can burn our skin, may have experienced sunburn, but actually the structures in your eye are just as susceptible to UV light as your skin is. And often the effect is cumulative over your lifetime. And so we're really concerned that these counterfeit and cheap sunglasses don't offer the right or any level of protection in some cases of the UV light. So people may be thinking, oh, I've got a great deal. I've got a lovely pair of counterfeit sunglasses and they look great and they look cool, but actually they're potentially harming your eyes and exposing you to damage the structures inside your eye.
It's interesting that 86% of parents take extra steps to ensure their children's eyes are protected with sunglasses, but they don't worry about their own particular health. Again, a fairly interesting line on that side of things, because we do need to ensure that, say, the very delicate nature of the eye is always protected.
That's right. So let's think about adults. The kind of conditions that UV light can cause, they can affect the lens inside your eye, resulting in cataracts. They can affect the retina on the back of your eye, resulting in macular degeneration. And actually, just like UV light ages your skin, it can also age the front of your eye. So the bright white on the front of your eye, the sclera and conjunctiva, that can age more rapidly in UV light and result in yellowing and a condition called pterygium without UV protection. And with children, it's even more important that have UV protection. Children's pupils are larger, so more UV light goes through to the back of their eyes. And also the lens is clearer, so again, there's greater transmission of UV light. And, you know, I think parents are really in the habit now of wearing a sun hat, ensuring their children have the sun cream on, but sunglasses are really important, and it should be those 3 things: hat, sunglasses, sun cream, to ensure the children are protected and have that protection from UV light.
And presumably this is even the case on cloudy days. I mean, obviously, we're supposed to be heading through another heat wave within the UK in the near future. Whether you're on a staycation, whether you're actually going abroad, it's still worth noting that the danger of high UV is very much prevalent.
Alex, that's a really good point. So just because there's a bit of cloud cover or a bit of haze, the UV light is still there and it can still cause damage to your skin and to your eyes. And there's some other myths as well, like if you're up a mountain, it's really cold, UV light's really dangerous there. It's more intense, actually. So just because it's cold, if it's bright sunny day and you're up a mountain or you're skiing or doing something like that, the UV light's really dangerous. Also, if you're doing water sports, so if you're out in the UK, the UV light will reflect off the water back up at you. So not are you only getting UV light from the top coming down, but you're getting it from underneath as well. And that's why having a good quality pair of sunglasses from a reputable retailer to ensure you get the UV protection, but also the fit is right as well. So they're well fitted. So if they're like hanging off in front of your face, the sun's been coming over the top, it's going to go up from underneath and get through. So a good, well-fitted pair of sunglasses, and they can be overwhelming. So, you know, people may want to, you know, talk to their local dispensing optician or optometrist about, you know, what to look for in a pair of sunglasses, the different lens options that are available, how to ensure they fit really well. And you know what, you don't even need to spend hundreds of pounds on a designer pair of sunglasses. Provided you get it from a reputable seller with the UKCA or CE mark, you will get that UV protection. And even better still, if you go to your optician, they'll ensure they fit really well. And if you need prescription sunglasses, you can have your prescription in there too.
So the key takeaway points, Daniel: number one, do not actually purchase your sunglasses online, no matter how tempting the offer might be, and certainly avoid adverts on social media. And really, number two, visit your optometrist and seek out advice from that point of view.
Absolutely. And you know what, if you're on holiday and you know you see a seller on the beach or near the airport and you see something that's too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true, you know, and resist that temptation, you know, saving a few pounds and looking cool in a pair of fake designer sunglasses, but actually it could be doing real long-term damage to your eyes.
Yes, you might think you're being Tom Cruise, but effectively it's not going to be impactful, even if you are sort of wearing the actual things for Top Gun. But there we are. That's a different line entirely. Daniel, any particular website that you'd recommend people should go to check out the College of Optometrists?
So, Alex, we've got loads of really great information, top tips and advice on our website, www.lookafteryoureyes.org. Advice for looking your eyes in the summer, what to look out for a pair of sunglasses, and the markings and regulations that you really need to have to keep your eyes safe.
Daniel Hardiman-McCartney, MBE, Clinical Advisor for the College of Optometrists. Huge thanks. And dare I say it, enjoy the sunshine.
You too, Alex. Take care.
Thank you.